Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
Greetings to Aquarimaxers.
Again, I am unprepared with the language. I need to think ahead.
Oh, yeah, probably. Can you think of one really quick just off the top of your head?
That we haven't done yet.
Yeah.
Have we done Portuguese?
Yeah, we've done Portuguese.
Have we done Gaelic?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I guess this isn't actually hello. It's more like, how you doing?
Do that one. So,
and it's formal. Kiamara ha shiv. There we go.
It's like, hi, how are you?
Yep. Yeah. You know, in the beginning, I don't know if any of you listened to Ashley MacIsaac, but he has an album called Hi, How Are You Today? And in the beginning of the very first track, there's this funny little voice, and it says, Kiamarahashiv! And then the other funny little voice says, Hi, How Are You Today? Which has nothing to do with anything, but I like it, because it makes me laugh. So you have to listen to it, too. Because I'm at the microphone.
Everyone's at the mercy of the microphone.
That's right. Okay.
So what do we got lined up for today?
We have Tom and Pro and Tony in New York and Gabe in the Bay Area from California.
And David from Facebook. I can't remember.
Okay. That's not on my list.
That's true. But we should address his question.
Oh, yes. Okay, let's do that one first.
Because other people might be thinking about the same thing. He had a good question. He said, are you going to be recording the classes you're going to be teaching, the fish class you're going to be teaching, aquarium class? And, great question. Short answer is no. Long answer is, we're not even going to be teaching it because the enrollments were too low, even despite Tom in Provo, who signed up for the class and was ready to come.
No, it was very sad.
But the enrollments were too low, and so they didn't carry the class. It's too bad. If it were up to me, I would have done it just for Tom.
But, yeah, that would have been fun, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, that's how the cookie crumbles. Anyway.
How the fish food flakes.
There you go. How the fish flakes fragment.
How the filter sputters.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Okay, anyways. So let's go to Tom.
Mm-hmm.
He says, thanks for episode 166. I particularly enjoyed the somewhat greater length, and the myths being busted was true. We went longer last time.
We did.
The newest issue of Live Bearer Journal from the American Live Bearer Association has an article by aquarist Mike Hellig describing a Matten filter. Excuse me.
I think you have to say it with a German accent.
Matten filter. That's my leather pants voice.
Yeah, it's not really your German accent, is it?
No, I don't really have a German accent. Okay. A kind of filter that is apparently popular in Europe. It is sometimes called a Hamburg mat filter, or HMF. If I understand correctly, it consists of a foam mat cut to the size of the aquarium wall. The mat partitions off a narrow section of the aquarium, and water is moved through it with an air stone. Among the advantages of such a filter... excuse me, sorry, guys, it's something in my throat. Among the advantages of such a filter is that Anubias and Java fern can grow on it, resulting in an entire vertical wall being planted. Hellwig posted earlier about this on the TFH blog, and he's got a link there which we can put up. And Googling for Matten filter do-it-yourself brings up a lot of instructions. I'm still at the stage where I'm challenged by an ordinary hang-on-the-back filter, but I was wondering if you or other Aquarimaxers had any experience with these.
Okay, well...
That sounds intriguing.
It is intriguing, yeah. I looked it up. I actually hadn't really heard of Matten filters before this, but I looked it up, and the principle seems sound. They have a certain type of foam. Mm-hmm. I guess it's called porete foam. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce
like
it. P-O-R-E-T.
Pour in the foam.
Sounds like that. P-O-R-E-T. And apparently it's quite a bit more rigid than most of the open cell foam that is used in the hobby for various things.
Closed cell foam?
No, it's still open cell foam, but it's just quite a bit, like I said, the structure is stronger, it's more rigid. Something like what you'd use in like an aqua clear filter as the filter sponge, but more rigid than that. But it's very similar to that in other respects. And I guess the idea is you you have a piece that's just a little bit too big for the part of the tank you're going to partition off, so that when you put it in, it kind of puffs out and it, you know, tightens up against the glass all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a hole drilled through it, and you have a PVC pipe on the other side, and you can use airlift. Just you stick an airlift tube down the PVC pipe from the top, and basically the current that's produced draws water from down there and pushes it through the hole in the filter to the rest of the tank. But that water moving through there causes water from the rest of the tank to be drawn through the foam, basically.
I think I'd have to see a picture. I'm having trouble picturing.
Probably.
There's water on both sides of the foam.
Yeah, water on both sides of the foam. But it's nice. And I went to the website, let's see, SwissTropicals.com.
Isn't that kind of an oxymoron?
Sort of, but it's a Swiss gentleman who, I can't think of the word. Justice. He runs the website.
Okay.
And he,
You just spoke Italian on the podcast.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble now.
I know.
He runs the website.
Do we have any listeners in Italy?
Oh, yeah, we do. People don't know.
Well, maybe they'll like it then.
Maybe they will. That would be cool. But he sells this stuff. He imports it to the U.S. and sells it. Because he's a Swiss gentleman, but he lives in the U.S. And so he imports it from Europe and sells it to be used as filters. You can also cut it up and use it in your own foam filters, sponge filters.
So it works for that, too.
Yeah, it does.
Interesting.
And I like a lot of the ideas. It sounds like a really great thing if you want to raise small fry in a tank.
Because they're not going to get stuck in it.
Because basically... biologically and in most practical ways, it functions as a very large sponge filter.
Mm-hmm.
So you get all the benefits of, you know, high biological activity. So you get a lot of, you know, the ammonia and nitrites are processed into nitrates quite quickly. As Tom mentioned, the plants will grow on it. So the aesthetics, you know, can be appealing if it's done right. And the space behind the filter, whether you're cordoning off... You know, I think it's Mike Hellewig's article that he mentioned in there.
Mm-hmm.
Says that if you have a fish room, a lot of times people in a fish room, they put their tanks in such a way so that you look at the small end. So instead of, like, this 55 in front of me, I'm looking at the 4 feet by whatever it is, 18 yeah. inches or 2 feet, whatever. But you look at the very small edge, that's the front of the tank in a fish room.
Because it's just like a stock room, it's not a display room?
Right, and you can still see the fish through that small...
Uh-huh.
The small
end
of the
aquarium.
But it allows you to put a whole bunch of tanks on a short shelf uh-huh. and still be able to see the fish through that end. But if you put on the far end, you put a Mappen filter.
Uh-huh.
We'll have to ask my sister, who speaks German fluently, how to pronounce that correctly in German. But anyway, put that in the back, and that's the wall of the tank, and you can put plants on it and so on. But you can also put things like the heater back there.
Behind it.
Yeah, and so...
So it's not showing.
You just look in there and all you see is a tank. And you don't you know, the equipment, really.
Yeah.
So it kind of functions several ways as a background, and as a sort of a sump, in a way, because you're putting the heater back there and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the detritus tends to collect down there in that part, so you can siphon the detritus out. But little fry don't get stuck in the filter. There's nothing to get stuck into, because they don't get stuck in the foam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're breeding Cory catfish or something, and they don't go through the foam.
I think it's intriguing that you can grow plants on it.
Right, right. And I'd heard before of growing plants on foam and using foam as a background. I'd even heard of filters that were, in a way, similar to this for reptile tanks, where you have a kind of a land area with tunnels and different sorts of things made out of a huge chunk of foam,
mm-hmm.
and you have water running through it, so it becomes a giant biological filter. I'd heard that, but not this particular application of this going on. I like the idea. It's cool.
See your wheels turning, you want to try it out.
Yeah. It'd be really great for, like I said, for fry tanks.
Mm-hmm.
We want to raise fry.
I have to say, I love how Tom signed
mm-hmm.
the email. I just noticed that.
Oh.
He says, Tom and Provo, and then the fish is with me.
Yeah, I did like that too. That
I'm so glad it is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Tom, for letting us know about that, and we'll put the link up.
Yes, we will. And he actually wrote again later because he had an incident in one of his tanks.
Oh, did he really?
Yes. So that's what the next one is right here,
okay.
So let's go into that.
Okay.
Still from Tom and Paul.
Still from Tom. He says, just noticed that one of my 6 neon tetras has a concave belly, slightly dimmed color and seems less active than the others, which are all fat, active, and bright. Being more concerned about the well fish than the sick one, I have removed it from the tank. I suspect an internal parasite. Should I dose the tank with something to keep the remaining fish well? In the past, whenever I have used fish meds, they have seemed to do more harm than good. I appreciate the quick reply I got.
Before we go there, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah.
I was time traveling there.
No, it's okay. So I emailed Tom back and asked him a few more follow-up questions about this, because it sounded like a problem. I asked him if he had quarantined that fish or if he had euthanized it, and that's what he had decided to do, the latter.
Mm-hmm.
Euthanize it, because he doesn't have a quarantine tank right now, and that's a lot safer than leaving it in the tank.
Right.
And I asked him a few more things, how long he had had him. He had had him for a while. And what else did I ask him? I basically suggested that he check all the parameters in the tank to see if anything is amiss. And if not, then maybe just watch. You know, watch and wait a bit, as long as the other fish are not exhibiting symptoms. But if other fish in the tank start exhibiting symptoms, it might be time to just try treating it.
What would you treat it with?
And that's the trick. It's hard to tell, you know, knowing what we know, which isn't very much right now. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And
did he send pictures?
I don't think he sent any pictures, no. But we don't know a whole lot about the situation, right? We know what he told us, and it's good information that he gave us, but it would be really difficult to be able to figure out what sort of parasite it is, or if indeed it is a parasite, it could be something different, too. And it's very difficult to tell without, you know, taking the fish into a vet, basically.
Mm-hmm.
A vet who treats, you know, aquatic animals. And that's
which there aren't
tricky.
Very many of those.
And now, you can narrow it down sometimes if you get, you know, you could see, this fish is demonstrating the classic signs of anchor worm or something like that. You know, there are ways to narrow it down, but without any of those definitive signs, it's difficult to tell. Some people I know would say, okay, well, if the other fish are starting to show things, and there are some indications here, as Tom mentioned, that point to internal parasites, they just say, PraziPro, use that.
What does that mean?
It's an anti-parasitic medication.
Oh, okay.
And there are other people
who say... I thought you were saying something in Latin.
Oh.
Just let it go, man. I don't know.
Okay.
In Latin.
Well...
PraziPro.
I could sort of see that. That makes sense. But
quid pro quo.
Quid pro quo. Yeah. So, I don't... It's hard to say what to do exactly in this case, but I would definitely test the parameters, because if it's something where the fish are... that one fish became immunocompromised because there's something amiss in the environment, that needs to be addressed. If that's not the problem, maybe everything's okay and that fish being removed quickly will solve the problem. And it's also possible that, you know, you do need to treat, but there could be so many things, different
mm-hmm.
things going on. Everything from, you know, mycobacteriosis, heaven forbid, or, like he says, a parasitic infection. Difficult to say. But hopefully he's going to let us know how it goes. He's mentioned that he's going to test the parameters today, and he said that all the fish have been doing well since quite a few months ago when he got them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a case where he bought new fish
and one of
they
them
were,
was
yeah.
sick, right?
So that's a good sign, and he's just going to keep an eye on things and let us know what goes on. So hopefully it goes well.
Well, good. So... Thank you, Tom, for both of you.
Yes, and we hope the healthy fish are with you.
Yes, only the healthy fish. Let's go ahead and take our break.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629. Or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Now.
Okay, welcome back. We are going to go to Tony in New York, and he says he's chipping in with some killifish ideas for Scott. We heard from Scott last week.
We did.
He wanted to get the blueberry shrimp, but they didn't have any left.
And he's also looking into setting up a couple of breeding tanks, 10-gallon breeding tanks. He wants something that's suitable for breeding in a 10-gallon tank. And he was thinking about killifish as a possibility. And Tony, We mentioned Tony and how he has kept Philly Fish, and maybe he would chime in. So he has done so. He
chiming
has granted our wish.
Chipping.
So he's got some great pointers and tips for Scott. Let's dive into them.
Okay. He says, yes, you would do well with killifish, I think. And yes, if you get yourself a plant spawning species, I think it will find them easy to keep and breed, even in a 10-gallon. The species I have tried and can therefore recommend would be the Fundulo Panchax Gardnieri Nigerianus. Sorry, guys. The Misage variety? Is that how you say that?
Misage? I don't know if it's that.
Misage? M-I-S-A-J-E.
Your guess is as good as mine, how you pronounce that.
That variety. And also I have kept the Fundulo Panchax Marmoratus GS88/1. What does GS88/1 mean?
I don't know.
But that's like not a normal scientific name kind of thing, is it?
Right. It's not. But with a lot of the a lot of the populations of things like killifish or rift lake cichlids, mm-hmm. they give them an additional designation because they don't have a species status. They're not unique enough to be a different species.
They're just populations.
They're a type locality. You know, they're not. I said that wrong. The type locality is where they're collected, but there's a particular type that is from that area, and only that area, and it might have certain.
They're not really different enough to be a species.
They have not been officially granted species status, but they're different enough that people desire to preserve that particular, the ones from that particular geographic mm-hmm. location, and so they give them a particular designation. And a lot of times, it is based on the location that they were at, and that may be the case there. I don't know. For sure, and there are other things that it's given on, like a lot of times it is named after a particular geographical spot.
Interesting. Okay, he says Fundulo Panchax species usually grow to about 2.5 inches long, and the males have wonderful coloration. Mine are blue and red with yellow, and the Misage even seems to have a bit of purple. 2 pairs of fish is fine for a 5-gallon tank. So if he has a 10-gallon tank, should he keep it at 2, or should
that.
He, you know, he could keep 3 or 4?
Yeah, and some killifish are pretty aggressive. The males can be aggressive with themselves, but it doesn't sound like, I think he's going to talk a little bit more about that.
He says, if I am not mistaken, most of these species eat their own fry, so when breeding these plant spawners, I indeed have had great success with Java moss. I think it is best to remove all the adults after spawning. This means you might want to maintain 2 10-gallon tanks at all times. The Misage males are aggressive towards one another in close quarters and will sometimes fight to the death, in my experience, so caution is required. The Marmoratus 88-1, however, are very peaceful, and I have never seen them fight. I can't offer advice on other killies, but the American Killifish Association was extremely kind and helpful to me as I was figuring it out.
So that's probably a good resource to check it out. And one nice thing is there's a killifish for every type of water, pretty much. And so if you want to go with a particular water quality of your area, it's a good thing to tell them. These are my water parameters, which killies would work.
That's good to
know. Or these are the water parameters I'm going to maintain, because as I recall, Scott is using RO water as part of his water so that he can, you know, reduce the hardness and so on.
Fundulo Panchax reportedly like pH in the 6 to 7 range. Mine I kept at 8.2 with no problems. Killies are very adaptable in my experience. Just make sure you acclimate them slowly to new conditions.
Oh, 8.2, that's about what we get out of the tap here.
Oh, wow.
And they're still breeding in that, so that's nice.
Finally, I have been told that baby brine shrimp are the first food you want for killies. I used Hikari First Bites almost exclusively, and this worked for me. Actually, Daphnia were also appreciated as an occasional snack. Still, the fry tend to be quite large compared to those of other species, so that's a bonus for first-time breeders as well, because they're a little bit easier to feed, right?
Yes. The bigger it is, the easier it is to feed in general. Okay. Good point.
He says, again, my experience is limited to just these 2 strains, the Misage and the Marmoratus 88-1, but chances are this advice holds fairly true for other Fundulo Panchax species, especially Gardnieri. Good luck, and please report back to let us know how you are doing.
Thank you, Tony. That's awesome. That's
really good advice.
Intro to the Fundulo Panchax killies that he keeps.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe one of those will work for you, Scott.
Yeah, it sounds like those would be a good match.
Okay, Gabe from the Bay Area, which is in California.
Indeed
just
it is.
In case. But he doesn't know. because there are lots of bays in the world, and I'm sure they all have areas around them.
That's probably true.
But the Bay Area is in California. And it's also where I spent the first half of my childhood.
It is indeed. And you were born there.
Yep.
Alameda County, right?
Castro Valley.
Yeah.
Alameda Hospital.
Yeah.
No.
Wasn't it?
That's not what the hospital's called.
But it is in Alameda.
Eden Hospital?
Area.
What's the... I can't remember what the hospital's called. I don't know where I was born.
Young.
Yeah, I couldn't read yet when I was born. Okay. So, Gabe from the Bay Area. Says, hey, hope life is treating you well. I've been binging on your episodes and listened to one of your more recent ones where you suggested doing a show on macro and micronutrients for the planted tank. I personally think that would be a brilliant idea. I've read countless books, forums, and websites, but there's no clear-cut answer on how to start off. After trial and error, I figured a method that works well for my tanks, but it was hard for me to figure it all out. Your depth of knowledge in all things aquarium would be rather helpful to any budding planted tank enthusiast, and I'd be happy to contribute my failures and successes in that realm.
Hmm. You know what? Maybe we should do is set up an interview. We can talk to Gabe about it.
So that email us again and let us know when you might be available.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. I, you know, have messed with the fertilizers and so on, but I think... I don't know. I don't feel like I'm an expert on fertilizers. I can use them.
Seems like a lot of it would, for every tank, even if you've done it before, it would be a lot of trial and error.
To some degree, it is a little bit different. You have to fine tune things to every tank. That's true. But yeah, mm-hmm. That would be fun. So maybe we should do that. Okay.
Do we have any? There was something.
There are several things.
What? Yeah. Tell me. Well, I don't remember.
Okay. Well, first of all, I have 10. Corydoras pygmaeus
coming tomorrow
in the mail via express mail.
You know what that means?
What?
You know when they're going to get here?
When?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow they're going to get here on your birthday.
They're going to get here on my birthday. It's my birthday tomorrow.
Yeah, although your presents are not fish.
No, but you can get fishy presents on my birthday and that's okay.
Yes. Do you want to open your presents before I open the box of fish or after?
No, I think you should take care of the fish first.
Okay. Anyway. So that'll be fun. I was supposed to get them last week. I didn't actually plan to receive them on Kelly's birthday. But the seller had some unanticipated family difficulties and had to leave town and wasn't able to ship until today.
Well, that's funny, because I think it's not quite as hot this week as last week, so probably I think it's probably better.
You know, it was really sad. We actually lost some shrimp, a shipment of shrimp that I sent out. The first one I've ever lost of shrimp, actually. Mm-hmm. I think I've lost, in all the packages that I've sent, I think I've lost 3.
Out of the whole however many years you've been shipping them?
Maybe 4. I don't know. It hasn't been a whole lot, but I was pretty surprised that I lost some shrimp. But it has been hot.
Yeah.
So I insulated the tar out of this replacement one and sent it out, and hopefully it'll be okay.
Hopefully it will be okay.
But it was sad to get the pictures of the poor little shrimp. Anyway, a couple of things. I will be, and I mentioned that I wanted to set up a breeding colony. And the 4 I was quarantining, I had a school of 9 or so of them before, and they slowly over the past few years have kind of petered out until I just had 2, and I was thinking, no, 2? We can't keep 2 Corydoras pygmaeus together. That's
too sad.
Really sad. And so I went to the pet store that usually has a lot of them, and they only had 2. And so I got 2 more and quarantined them. And the quarantine ended just yesterday. Was it yesterday? I don't know. It was recently. Maybe it was the day before yesterday. And I put them in the tank, and it's been really interesting to see how they interact. Because we had 2 and 2, and the 2 in each tank would hang around with each other a lot,
mm-hmm.
right? Just the 2 when they were in the original tank. And now, sometimes they'll split up, and when they do split up, it's almost always the 2, which I can recognize very easily, actually. The original 2 or the second 2 hang out with each other, or they're
buddies.
All together.
And but they don't switch partners.
They don't switch partners very often. And sometimes you have 3 of them and then an odd man out.
Oh.
Sometimes.
Maybe he just wants a minute.
But it's always a different one. It's not always the same fish that does that. The reason why I can tell, one of them is really old and has a little bit of a funny shape to it.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is really small. It's young. It's very, very small. Mm-hmm. It's like half adult size. And then the other two are adult size, and look, the ones I had before are both adult size, but they're perfectly well-shaped.
Interesting.
And anyway...
So is it the old one and the young one together and the two adults together?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's funny how they interact. The new fish, when I just had put them in and they were just settling in, the older fish came over to them, swam up to them, and were like, touched them with their barbels, uh-huh. and then kind of wiggle up, almost like a betta does, you know, when it displays, uh-huh. wiggle up to the other one. Not aggressively exactly, but just very insistently.
Hey, who are you? Look at me. Talk to me.
Yeah, it was interesting that they would do that. And one thing that I've noticed, and many other people have noticed too, is that when you keep a small group of them together, like three or four,
uh-huh.
they don't always stay together as much, but if you get a bigger group, they will.
So that means you'll have 14?
I'll have 14, and that should be enough to help.
That's a good-sized group.
Yeah, and then once they breed, it'll be even more. And you can keep quite a few in a 20-gallon tank, because they're so diminutive. So I'm looking forward to that.
Can you keep the parents in with a fry?
It depends on who you talk to, but yes. There are at least several people who do this a permanent breeding setup, they call it, mm-hmm. where you have the parents are in there and the babies just sort of grow up in that tank. If you do it right, they can, yeah.
Do you have males and females right now, or can you tell?
I am still trying to determine that. The youngest one I can't really tell yet.
She's too little.
And I think my two adults are males, and I think the other one is a female.
The older one is a female?
The older one is a female, but she might be a little bit past breeding age. She mm-hmm. looks pretty old.
Well, then it will be fun to see.
Yeah.
Little babies.
It will be fun. Let's see, there was something else I wanted to talk about. I've been feeding the microworms with a plastic tube, because if you just swish microworms into the tank, they go all over.
Oh, feeding the microworms to the fish.
Yes, and they get lost.
You meant feeding food to the microworms, and I was trying to figure out how you were doing that.
Oh, no. I've got... if you just take the cotton swab and swish it around in the water, the microworms end up everywhere.
They have to run around and find them.
And it's hard for them to settle on. So what I've been doing, I have two terracotta plant trays. I've got in each of the tanks, both the quarantine tank and the original tank. And basically, I use them as food dishes, which seems kind of weird for fish, you know, but it works. Because they've got...
Maybe we should, like, paint Fido on the side of it.
Yeah, to make it kind of...
Or Gil. We can name them all Gil.
We can name them all Gil, collectively.
Name them all Gil.
Yeah, the school is called Gil.
Yeah.
But the little trays work well. I have some... the rigid plastic tubing, half-inch tubing, and some one-inch tubing, one for one tank, one for the other. Because
mm-hmm.
I always have some of that around, you know. And I cut some so that it just goes right close to the surface of the water. And then I can get some microworms on a... I guess Walter one's what I got right now anyway, but I get some on a cotton swab and dip it in, and the microworms...
At the top of the tube into the water.
At the top of the tube. And the microworms slowly go down, and it takes them about 30 seconds to hit the bottom. But then they all gather on that, inside that food dish.
Instead of dispersing out into the water
column. All over the water column and getting all stuck in the filter and, you know, ending up in the gravel and that kind of thing. They land right there, and the quarries love it. The pygmy quarries go crazy over
it. They figured out that's where they need to go to eat.
Right. And everybody else has too in the tank, depending on who's in there. But the pygmy quarries, I just have red cherry shrimp and, yeah, that's about it. And in the quarantine tank, the tank I was quarantining them in, I have assassin snails in there. And some shrimp too, but...
But they all know to go eat the worms in the dish.
They all go find the worms. I mean, the quarries are the ones who really eat the worms, but the shrimp come there for pellets and everything, too. And it's nice, because I've also noticed that it reduces the amount that the amphipods and the planaria get.
Well, that makes sense.
Because it doesn't...
Because they haven't figured it out.
It doesn't sift down into the gravel right. where they can get to it. So I think that's a plus as
smart
well.
Smart idea.
And so it seems to be working really well. They love the microworms. It's really funny. You can barely see the microworms when you put them in there, because they sort of flatten out over that top of the terracotta plate,
mm-hmm.
and you can kind of see something sort of shimmering there, but you see the little quarries go to it, and they just...
It's like spaghetti.
You can see them slurping them up, and they love the... I'm feeding them the Hikari... What is it? The wafers? It's one of the wafers. I can't remember. It's one of the wafers for bottom feeders.
Mm-hmm.
They love them. And so they all seem to be doing really well on those foods. And I'm sure they're picking up baby amphipods and things like that from the substrate as well.
Yay.
And, oh, there was another funny thing, just as we're talking about those tanks.
What?
You know, I do have the African dwarf frog in there still. I had forgotten to mention that before.
Mm-hmm.
But the other day I was feeding him some mysis shrimp using a target feeder. And he will reach his head into the little, there's a little compartment in the target feeder. He will reach his head into it and grab it. He whenever he sees
the
target feeder,
he is
excited. He loves that thing. And he'll stick his head in there and gulp down the mysis shrimp. But I had just fed him some mysis shrimp, a couple of mouthfuls of mysis shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And he just started going on this rampage after amphipods. And I don't know if it's because he was
the
really excited
shrimp
about
were
the mysis
appetizers.
Shrimp. Or I just happened to catch him because I knew he was eating them before, too.
Mm-hmm.
But right within a few, just like a minute, I watched him successfully hunt down. Because most of the time when I watched him eat amphipods, he would strike at one and miss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but this time, I saw him strike and catch about four in about 1 minute.
Oh, wow.
Or so, maybe
roll.
1 or 2 minutes. And he caught them. I saw him grab them. And he was, you know, mouthing them to death, as they do. And you'd see him stick it partway out of his mouth again and then slip it back up. And so it was cool to watch him do that.
Froggy table manners.
Yeah, in such a short period of time. You know, he was eating a lot of them. I don't know if I had stimulated him to start hunting because of the mysis shrimp or if that was just normal or whatever. But
he just said, hey, they're here, I'll eat them too.
Yeah, it was fun to see. I wish I had gotten it on video.
That would have been neat.
But maybe I'll try that again.
Yeah.
Next time I feed him some mysis shrimp, I at least video that.
We should do some upright conditioning with him and see if we can teach him some tricks with the target feeder.
Maybe so.
That would be fun.
This is the funny thing. Fish are pretty easy to train with upright conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I had a lot of experience doing that. It's quite easy. I've also trained rats. I've trained budgies. I've trained cats. I've trained dogs and all
kids.
Sorts of creatures with upright conditioning. Okay.
Train the kids.
And a lot of them are really pretty easy to train with upper conditioning. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to train Hito, and
yeah.
It was really hard.
He didn't get it, huh?
I think the problem is, it's because he is so inaccurate when he eats.
Oh.
It was really, really difficult
yeah,
to...
Yeah, that would be difficult
have
to
him correlate
them, huh?
A conditioned reinforcer with the primary reinforcer of food. It was really difficult.
That's a good
point. I tried with a flashlight. I'd flash the light right before I gave him the food, right before he ate the food. But he was so inaccurate.
Because he misses
miss
all
it.
The time, huh?
And, yeah, and he has to go like 5 or 10 times before he will get it sometimes.
Yeah, that's
just,
a good point.
It
that's
wasn't
not
very effective.
Work very well.
It might work better with a dwarf frog because he's already associated the
target feeder.
The red tip
Does
of Hito, the target feeder.
Will Hito not use the target feeder?
I haven't used the target feeder with him. I should try that.
Yeah, try that.
Because I tried a flashlight. Target feeder might mm-hmm. work. It's worth a try. Because it certainly worked with the African dwarf frog.
Yeah.
It's already a conditioned reinforcer for him. Interesting. Well,
maybe we'll play with that this summer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a
Teach
good point.
Teach them to tap dance and juggle bowling balls.
Yeah. Well, you know, Hito loves red wigglers.
Yeah.
Know, the worms.
That's true.
But if I put a red wiggler in there with a conditioned reinforcer, it might be 10 minutes before
it
he actually
takes
eats
him
the
too
thing
long
before
to
he finds it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
Well, and plus then he's full afterwards. You can't, because it's
right.
As long as he is.
Yeah. So, anyway, those are some interesting things that have happened this week. And I'm going to be moving a tank this week because I got a double stand to replace the single stand that's in our bedroom. So I'll probably be doing that this week, switching stands, and that'll be fun. I'm going to report on that. And, yeah.
Hope it will be fun.
I hope it will be
the
fun.
Actual moving will not be fun.
No, but I'm just going to use, I have 3 clean buckets, and I'm going to use a pump to drain the tank out of the buckets, and then I'll use the buckets and the pump to put all the water back in.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.